Hello and welcome to The Exit presented by Flippa. This is a 30-minute podcast featuring amazing entrepreneurs who have been there and they have done it. The Exit talks to operators who have bought and sold businesses of all different sizes. You'll learn how they did it, why they did it, and get exposure to the world of exits. It's a world occupied by a small few, but accessible to many. Now, in this episode, I sit down with Biette Chalette. And she is a fantastic entrepreneur who started in photography, created a stock photo photography platform, and worked with some of the greats like Francis Ford Coppola and some incredible celebrities. And it's a really great story of how she comes into the world of business and really just enjoyed the business side of things much more than the photography side. But starting in photography and really nailing that was the first step. And before we get into this episode, I really just want to give a very humble thank you and shout out to the community here at The Exit, because we have become a top 5% podcast out of 2.5 plus million shows out there globally. So becoming a top 5% podcast is a huge, huge accomplishment for this show and this community. And we really hope that we will get to that 1% mark very soon. But once again, thank you for all of the amazing support to everyone out there. And without further ado, let's jump right into the episode here with Biette Chalette. Hello, everybody. Today, I am joined by Biette Chalette, and she is the growth architect at Chalette Enterprises. How are you going? How's it going today?
It is going awesome. I can't wait, Steve.
Yeah, I'm so excited to have you here. And I know a lot of people are really going to love the story of your exit and everything. So before we get into the nitty gritty of the exit, let's hear about your background. What got you into business and starting businesses?
Well, my story is really that I was a creative, or I thought, Steve, I was a creative. And then I realized very quickly as I was in the photography field that I was just exponentially better at the business side behind the creative aspect of things. And so, you know, what other people struggled with, I'm like, well, but that's so obvious. I mean, you know, first you have to do that, and then you have to do that, and the systems have to be set up in a certain way, and here's the process and the formula, and then there's glazed eyes. And they're like, well, let me talk about the photo. Let me talk about the composition. I'm like, yeah, but you still gonna have to sell it, right? Mm-hmm. So I really got to the business side of anything because I love creativity, and I'm a trained photographer. It's really my only degree, but I love business. To me, that is the creative part.
Mm, nice. Well said. So what was the company, the photography company, and what did you create? And what did you eventually sell?
Yeah, so I first went to photography school back in Germany, and then I became photo editor at Elle magazine in Germany. And I did that because, you know, again, I was better at the systems and I liked putting things together and producing. And then I immigrated to the United States, became a photographer representative, and then did a lot of still photography production, worked for clients like Mercedes-Benz, Levi Strauss, Wrangler, and BMW. And then eventually I started my own stock photography syndication that was specialized in architectural and interior photography images. And I, as a side effect really of this business, I started doing a lot of at-home stories, celebrity at-home stories, Steve. And so you have to imagine that, you know, I went after the top guys first. So this is really already my first tip for your audience, Steve, is don't bother with C-level, go straight for A. Why? I mean, it's the same amount of effort. So when people always say, well, you know, make sure you practice on lower level before you get to the big jobs. Why? Why wouldn't you go after the big jobs? You got the big job, you figure it out, right? Mm-hmm. And so I went after the top names. And then once I had the top names, they work for the greatest architects, greatest interior designers who do all the celebrity homes. And so I had Madonna, Francis Ford Coppola, Simon Baker, Julianne Moore, and these stories just kept on coming. But Steve, remember, I was a photo editor at Elle magazine. So of course I was like, well, I know how to sell these. And so eventually it became the world leader in celebrity home stories.
Wow. Wow. That must have been pretty surreal working with like Coppola and some of these really big names.
just getting started in business and expanding out and growing your network, coming across those names is pretty impressive.
Yeah, but I was I worked at Elle magazine before. And yeah. So for me, the celebrity aspect of it, I'm one of those people, it doesn't really faze me. Mm-hmm. And it's not that I have to think about that they're just like you and me. To me, they are. Mm-hmm. I found that people that are at the top of their game in either, in sports or in acting or in music, that they're really only good at one particular thing. That's that thing. Mm-hmm. But they're the best at that one thing. Mm-hmm. But don't ask them to put a nail in the wall or a lot of them don't have other skill sets outside of that. And so once I saw that at Elle magazine, and I remember this incident, Steve, where I was talking to an Olympian and he was one of those, what do you call it when they jump off the board and they do all those saltos and things?
Oh, like a high diver or like a...
A diver, right? And the nicest guy, an Olympian, mm-hmm. but that was really all he knew how to do. And so when you look at your skill set compared to that skill set, you say, well, here you are, you're the best at one thing. And here I am, I'm good at a lot of different other things. So what's better? It doesn't matter what's better. It means it's my choice. And that's really important for business owners and entrepreneurs to know, Steve, that when you are building your business, that a lot of times you always compare yourself to the one guy that has it like all figured out. But what if that's the one thing that they know how to do?
Yeah.
And they don't know how to do anything else. And so maybe you're better off because you are good at 10 things. You're just not as great as this one person, but you're really good at a lot of things and you know how they connect with each other. So within that, you find your sweet spot and then you step into it and you say, well, I can own it because I see and I know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So let's talk about the business. How big did you scale the team? I mean, a lot of people talk about difficulties with growing teams and, getting to the point of an exit. So how did that work for you guys? And how did the initial conversation start with the exit itself? Hey guys, Steve here, and taking a quick pause from the interview. I know that selling a business can feel unattainable and just out of reach for everybody, but it's definitely something that is very reachable for people that are listening to this podcast with Flippa. And I've mentioned that this show is presented by Flippa. They have over 3 million users on their platform who are looking to acquire everything from content sites to e-commerce stores to SaaS platforms or even mobile applications. So if you're curious and want to know more about what your business is worth, head to flippa.com/theexit for free valuations on your business. It takes a couple minutes to literally go through, and you can just go through the whole process without committing to anything at all. So once again, flippa.com/theexit, check it out, get evaluation on your business without any commitments, and just see exactly what your valuation of your business is worth. So let's dive into the interview.
So number one, I started this business with the idea that I was going to sell it. So that was clear from the very beginning. And this had something to do with the story of, one day I woke up and I had a really bad feeling about my employee, and I fired her. And I found out later that I fired her 2 weeks too late because she had gotten too close to a key vendor and they had this idea of setting up a business, which was my business, without me. Mm-hmm. And it resulted in this gnarly 1 year long lawsuit, cost me everything I had. Wow. And so when I built this particular business, I was very clear that this was never going to happen to me again. And I learned that number one, the biggest mistakes entrepreneurs make or business owners make is that they believe they need to clone mini-me's. And what I mean by that is that the business owner says, well, I'm good at this. I can do my WordPress thing. I can write a blog. I can edit my own video. I can make the sales calls. I can do the networking. I can do this. I can do that. And then they're really not good at any of it. They're just good enough to get it done. And then they want somebody working for them that does the exact same thing. So then there's two people doing the same things. You cannot grow a business like that. So that was very clear to me that in order for me to sell my business, the idea was to get subject matter experts lots of them, and put them in very narrowly defined positions so that as the org chart goes up, right, as I go further up and I hire more people, then the org chart goes wider and wider and the subject matter expert becomes more specialized and more specialized, which typically means that you have a lot of turnover when you are going from that first level to the next level, because the person that's in at the ground up, they kind of want that family kind of atmosphere for mm-hmm. the most part. But when you're scaling up, then people go, well, it used to be that we be hanging out and we talk about kids and, you know, and suddenly it's all business. And so the setting up teams, the secret to setting up teams is at this very moment, no matter where you are in your business, I'd rather have you have four subject matter experts that work 5 hours each in your team than having you have one that works 20.
Hmm. Nice.
It is less dangerous to your business because if one fails, you only have 1/4 to fill, not the whole thing.
Yeah.
And when you grow, you now can say these 5 hours are 10 hours, these are 15 hours, these are 20 hours, these are 40 hours. So you know which of these positions are full-time positions. But I think a lot of times we get all confused about we need an employee per se. You know, I mean, you can't put somebody on payroll for 5 hours a week. You know, it's not about violating any employment laws, but it is about being really smart about what do you need for your business? If you don't need somebody for 20 hours, why would you pay them for 20 hours?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well said. I like that splitting up expertise. That's really, really well said. So the exit itself, in terms of the deal, how did it come across to you? Did they approach you? Did you approach them? And what was the deal like?
So I did, as I built the business, I recognized that I had to make it more desirable. So I had the high-end market covered. And now I needed to do something to prove the concept that there was a mass market appeal for my product. So we set up this whole launch and we put a lot of time and energy and money in it to launch a vertical expansion, which was our royalty-free brand at the time. So really what it was is all the photos that didn't make the A cut, now we had another place for it. And we were able to take more images and put it in the other database. And as we are going out, we are making a big fuss. We're sponsoring an event. We show up with our entire team. I mean, we make a show. Mm-hmm. We put up a show. And then we were signing a lot of deals on the spot. And that is what put us on the map to be recognized as a serious player in a rapidly growing company. And at that point, one of my mentors, and I remember the day, like it was yesterday, we are in Prague at a conference on the rooftop. He literally just announced that he had sold his business for $70 million. And we are up there, you know, and I'm toasting to him and he turns around, he looks at me, Steve, and he puts his finger in my face and he says, "You, my dear, you're next." Mm-hmm. And then he said to me, "You got to know the number." And so I went back and I'm like, I should be next. And I put my number in my head. I knew what the number was. It had to be a number so I never have to work again, because what's the point otherwise? And then I put the word out and said that I was available for acquisition, because I could feel at the time that the market opened for another round of acquisitions. And there was, and then the offer came and it was too good to refuse.
Nice. That's great. So they approached you with the offer, and what was the time frame? How long did it take for the transition to happen? And did you stay at the company?
Yes. Yeah, so the transition from the day I had said I wanted to sell it until I got a serious letter of intent was probably about 6 months.
Oh, wow.
And then in the due diligence portion, which took a long time, and that probably was about 4 months, because the company was privately held by Bill Gates. And so they were protecting Bill Gates more than anything. I mean, I had to pull out divorce agreements. I had to, you know, submit. I mean, I had to give them everything there is to know about me because Bill Gates is a great target to be sued. So their job is to protect him. Mm-hmm. And so then once we went through with the transition, I stayed on for a one-year contract. I planned it out for the acquisition and the transition to be completed in 6 months, which it was. I ran the whole transition. I did the training materials. I trained all the salespeople. I recorded all the manuals, all the videos. I was there for all the salespeople. I gave them the presentation so they knew what the brand was. I calculated what their return on investment would be on their investment in my company, which we hit all of our targets. And then they offered me a job as a senior director of global entertainment, which I accepted. And I did that for a year, and that gave me the idea for my next company.
Nice, nice, very nice. So anybody that's listening that's maybe a first-time entrepreneur or a 10th time, 100th time, that's thinking about selling a business, you went through this long diligence process. What would you say or what advice would you give to someone for preparation? Like obviously you said starting knowing that you're going to sell the business, having that number locked into your head is a great tip. What would you say people should be looking at or tracking to get ready for that long diligence process that's similar to what you went through?
Well, number one, Steve, the most critical part is that if you think you need to set your business up so it's not your business, it's a business. Mm-hmm. That emotional connection that it's yours is great, but that's not going to help you sell it. So when you have to treat it like it's a business and then it'll start to act like one. So that's really the number one thing. So it's like a baby, right? You have to, yes, your baby, but it's got to walk on its own. It's got to, you know, it's got to learn how to talk on its own. Eventually it's going to learn how to dress itself. You know, it's going to learn how to ride a bike. So you have to look at your business in the same sense. It's like, what do I need to teach my business that it needs to do that it's not doing yet? And independence from you, because the whole point of selling is that it can run without you. So business owners that have this idea of I am the business, that's what's not going to be able to be sold. But if somebody looks at the business and you have the infrastructure set up, and so this is sort of where my sweet spot is today, is I'm focusing on setting up business and systems for people just like me, because most people don't know how to do that. Mm-hmm. And so a transition can only take place if there's something to transition. And if the buyer can see that you set it up for an easy transition, which is why our transition was 6 months, not a year. I mean, we were done in no time. I mean, even the whole content to move, because we had naming conventions, we had formulas, we had systems, we everything was set up in such a way that they had to just identify where it was and then they could incorporate that in their system. So I can't overemphasize, Steve, the importance of setting up systems that are clean and clear and easy to understand, even if it's a pain in the butt right now to do and to detangle, but that's what sells. It's a system that sells your business, not necessarily just the idea.
Well said. Well said. So in terms of the, you know, what you would say if, I guess if you were a first-time entrepreneur and you were getting ready to sell the business, you know, like you said, you have a system in place. How would you, if you went through it again, would you say was the timing? I think a lot of questions that I get on a regular basis are around timing. And you said that the market had kind of shown you a window and that there was a good wave of M&A happening. What would you tell someone that maybe was in a different industry or just getting started about around timing to sell?
Timing is everything, really. The idea of setting up a business for acquisition is that you need to do something that you can do faster and better than anyone else, that they can do on their own and that they want. So the high-end market, what I focused on was what sold my business, because they could not do this, because a large organization cannot do that kind of systematic handholding, which is really a big mistake for them to buy something like that, because that is an unsustainable business model for them. Because in an organization, everything is structured. So you can't do these extra things that it takes for something that is so sexy and so lucrative, but it only is as sexy and lucrative because it took so much handholding. Mm-hmm. So you got to be very clear what that thing is that you're building, that what is it that, why would someone else want that? We were a natural addition to a brand that this company already had bought that they couldn't grow. For the reasons I just told you about, they just didn't know those were the reasons. So they thought if they bought something else, they could grow that even more, because it was a logical expansion idea. Mm-hmm. So how can you set your business up for sales? Well, number one, you want to be very, very aware of how do you set it up? Make sure that it's an equity type business or it has equity components in it, because that is sexy. You got to be around people that are interested in that, which means your competitors. And at one point, you got to put the word out, because the best one to buy you is your competitor. Mm-hmm. The competitors want to buy what you have to get you off the market. Sometimes Facebook and Google, they are just buying you so they can get rid of you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That is swimming in front of the bigger fish. Sometimes the bigger competitor is ultimately a good strategy. So Yes. The finale question that I like to ask everybody is, knowing what you know now, after going through everything that you've gone through with the exit, what would you tell yourself 10 years ago?
I probably would have told myself that other people really don't care about you as much as you think they do. And number two is to fail faster. The idea of this, of failure as a detriment in entrepreneurship, is a disservice. It is the failing fast that gets you to the goal faster, because it's like driving a car with an outdated GPS and then finding out that that street's now a dead end. Mm-hmm. You wouldn't get out of the car, throw yourself on the ground and throw a temper tantrum. You simply get in the car, you turn around, because you can see the building is like right there, right? So you just turn around and you take another way there, and you go like, well, dude, you know, they really need to update their GPS. That's the attitude you need to have about failure.
Yeah. Well said. Well, what are you working on now, and where can people go and learn more?
Yeah. So right now I'm really working on my systems. And so I do a lot of strategic work on helping business owners to figure out what their systems and formulas is, to help them set them up for acquisition and for streamlining their stuff and getting rid of things. So, you know, I've developed something called the 5-Star Success Blueprint, Steve, that allows me to diagnose very quickly where the problems are, and then help the business owner to determine where and what needs to be fixed for them to get to their goals. And the thing that I invite all of your audience to take advantage of, part of my system, is what I call the Airtight Avatar. That's a masterclass on how to find really good clients and getting really clear who this ideal client of yours is and how to design these avatars. And all you do is you go to airtightavatar.com. It's free. Take the masterclass and reach out if you have any questions. Be happy to put my email in the show notes so you can reach out to me. I always love to hear from the audience.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, wherever you guys are listening or watching, all of the links will be in the show notes. But once again, thank you so much for coming on the show and sharing your story.
What a pleasure to be here. Thank you so much, Steve.